All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News and Focus program. It's Thursday afternoon. The pastors of Berean are gathered around. We've got an article that Joey found for us. Joey, tell us where this thing is found.
It was a blog site that my wife found, and her and I have been discussing this, and she sent it over to me. It's by Matthew Warner, and I think the blog is called The Radical Life.
Any idea who Matthew Warner is?
No, but he seems somewhat maybe Catholic by the use of the word saints in the text, so that would really only indication that I had.
So Paul's Catholic too, Joey, because I mean,
well, according to this guy, only special people get to be saints.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
Why I was saying
he
refers to Saint Nicholas as a special person because he's a saint.
All right, Brian, well, why don't you introduce the article?
Are you lying to your children about Santa? Disclaimer. Just so everyone's clear, if you choose not to do Santa, I don't think you're a Grinch out to ruin the magic of your kids' childhood. In fact, in my experience, you're most likely an outstanding parent whose thoughtfulness should be commended. Every child should be so blessed. I just think many parents struggle with aspects of Santa that really shouldn't be struggles at all. In fact, I think they're big opportunities. Here are some thoughts. My wife and I play a game with our 2-year-old son. It involves catching a fish. You never know if it's going to be a little tiny fish or a great big whale of a fish. You can play this game on the bed, on the floor, pretty much anywhere. To begin, you have to look very carefully all around you to try to find a fish just under the surface of the water. Once you spot one, you try to snatch it out of the water with your bare hands. But you have to be quick, because fish are very quick. Once you've caught a fish, it's just a bit of a juggling act. The fish is usually squirming and flopping around, as a fish out of water does. So, it's usually quite a struggle and a workout to keep the fish from getting away, especially if it's a big one. The fish is very hard to hold on to, as fish are so very slippery. Once you start getting tired of trying to hold on to this jumping, squirming fish, you pass him off to another person so they can wrestle with it for a while. Eventually, the fish gets away and you start over again. It's hilarious. Just ask my son. Now,
okay, Joey, are we supposed to take this article serious?
Yeah. Are we going to get somewhere?
Give him a little time. We're going to stop talking about imaginary fish in just a second, I think.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
So you can skip down to "So what about Santa Claus" if you want. Okay. That's where we need to get.
Well, I want to hear what happens to the fish.
Okay.
Now, is the existence of this fish, of the fish in this goofy game, a part of an elaborate lie? Of course not. We're just using our imagination and teaching our son to do the same. We also showed him how using our imagination lets us have a lot of fun with very little. More importantly, we used our imagination to learn about something that is very, very real. Just because we imagine something doesn't mean it's not real.
David, I was thinking you could do this with basketball. You could have your players dribbling an imaginary basketball and they could pass it back
and
forth.
We'd probably make a lot more shots this way.
It went in.
No, you missed that one. Well, I saw it.
As the article says, we imagine things all the time. Does my 2-year-old fully understand the difference between our fishing game and real fishing yet? Not quite, but one day he will. And in the process, he's learning a lot of real things about real fish, even if we exaggerate and have some fun with it in the process. So what about Santa Claus? Well, try to catch him. Sorry. We live in a culture that has taken Christ out of Christmas. Our appetite for material goods is insatiable. Our religion, a cult of consumerism, our dogma, the marketing maxims of slick sales as execs, and that have redefined for us what it means to be prepared for Christmas. Rather than prayer, fasting, and repentance, we prepare by just buying lots of stuff. And they've made Santa Claus the spokesperson. So it's no surprise that, as a reaction to all of that, some have been tempted to throw Santa Claus right out and get back to the reason for the season. And besides, why do we tell such lies to our kids about some imaginary man in a sleigh anyway? Well, I'll tell you. First, the story of Santa Claus is a Christian story. Hello. When told properly, that was in the article, by the way. When told properly, it points to and emphasizes Jesus Christ. So, it's actually one of the fun ways to get back to the reason for the season, and kids like fun. Second, therefore, Santa Claus is not the problem. The commercialization of Christmas has victimized him as much as any of us. In fact, I'm pretty sure the real Santa Claus isn't taking all of this too lightly either. Which brings me to my next point. Santa Claus is a real person. So it's not a lie to say that Santa Claus is real. Has he died? Yes. But he's not really dead. He's alive in heaven, which means he's more fully alive than any of us. Santa Claus equals Santa Claus equals Saint Nicholas equals Saint Nicholas. Make it a lesson in linguistics for your kids. Santa means saint. A saint is someone who has lived a life of heroic virtue, a life worth mimicking, a life worth observing, a life worth learning from, a life that points to Christ. Saint Nicholas was a 4th century bishop in the church, and his spirit of giving and serving the poor is worth remembering by reenacting and imagining his life and then learning from it. More importantly, the reason he served the poor and gave of himself so much is because he served Christ at the center of his life. And he did so with heroic enough virtue that we remember it thousands of years later. We are also called to lives like that. That's the radical call of being a Christian, not necessarily to dramatically cast out all the fun in our lives.
All right, is that enough to talk about? Is there something significantly more worthy?
He really just goes on to talk about how believing in Santa allows kids to use their imagination. We allow them to believe in lots of fictional different things growing up, and we teach them later whether it's true or not. And just that kind of balance, when is it lying to our kids and when is it not lying? When do we tell them, is Santa real, yes or no? That's kind of the... And he seems to think... It just depends on the parent, you know, what you tell your children at what age. And
I see here he makes a reference to creation.
Yes, in Genesis he talks about it's just a the point of the story is not the six little days. It's just the fact that God created. He's not trying to be specific about exactly
probably is
how
a Catholic then.
Yeah.
Probably is a Catholic then. So it's allegory, right?
Allegory, yeah.
Yeah, lots of allegories. So somehow my child is supposed to make the connection between a fat guy in a red suit to a legitimate saint or a bishop in the 4th century. So, Joey, you are a new parent. My boy's 18. He's never been taught that Santa was anything. You, on the other hand, have a son that's almost 2, right?
He'll be 2 in July.
So cognitive skills are getting there.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Kellett household going to do?
I don't think it's something we're going to emphasize. Obviously, he's going to see him around and that kind of thing. And, you know, I ask him what Santa says. I'm trying to get him to say ho, ho, ho just for fun. But I don't think it's something that we're going to put a lot of stock in. It's not something we're going to emphasize. And when he asks the question, we'll be very honest with him and tell him, no, he doesn't exist. It doesn't really matter the age or what I'm trying to do is imagination. He doesn't exist. It's a fun story, but it takes away from the Christ of Christmas.
Anyone else? What else? John, what did you do with your sons?
We never said much about it either. We just make jokes, I guess, about it. I call them Satan Claus and stuff. And
wow. Fun with the kiddies.
Yes. Probably not the best thing to do. I think that was only once. But anyway, it was in jest when they were older. But I think I talked to you about this, Joey, just a little while ago. One thing I learned when I first got married from my wife, she had lots of good insight. She emphasized the real ways people lie to their kids, and we just didn't think Christmas was a big way that people really lie to their kids, because I think they actually figure it out and know it's not real. So, we never, told our kids this is from Santa and blah, blah, blah. So we didn't really emphasize that, like Joey said, but it was around, so they kind of, knew about it, but we debunked it pretty quickly, I think, as they were, toddlers or whatever. But, we emphasize the real way people lie to their kids, like when you're in the grocery store or the toy store and they say, I want this, and you say, we don't have enough money to buy this. When you have enough money, you just are a wimpy person. Don't tell them, no, you can't have it because I don't want you to have it right now. So we would emphasize those ways that people would lie to their... I think those are more detrimental habits because they continue on eventually Santa Claus goes away and it's not really an issue.
I grew up with Santa Claus. We had separate Christmas for Santa, gifts from Mom and Dad, gifts from Santa, the whole works. It was a big deal. And Austin's grandfather was very upset with us that he wasn't going to be allowed to perpetuate that fun with Austin and continue that. Anybody else?
Well, I know I grew up with it, and it never really affected my faith in things. You know, like we had to, Mom and Dad gave us presents the night before, and then we woke up Christmas Day, and we had all the presents from Santa Claus. So I don't think it affected my faith in any serious way growing up.
I was kind of the same. I mean, when I was younger, or when my brother and sister and I were all younger, I mean, kind of the same. We'd open some presents Christmas Eve, and then Christmas morning, nothing was wrapped. It was just, you know, the toys or whatever were out, and, you know, I can't remember my parents ever really putting, you know, from Santa Claus, but it was kind of the implied, oh, look what Santa brought, and, you know, we figured out early on that, you know, it was just my parents, but, you know, it was kind of it was kind of a cute thing or fun thing, and I did the same thing with our girls when they were little. You know, one of them would put, you know, cookies and milk out for Santa Christmas Eve, and, you know, to us it was just kind of a fun thing to do, and, you know, I think both my daughters figured out early on, you know, there wasn't really a Santa, you know, they kind of knew it was make-believe, and that, one of the points that the guy that wrote the blog comes out, you know, like, he's asking, you know, are princesses and castles real? Well, yes, but, you know, did Princess Jasmine really exist? Or what? Well, you know, no. So, you know, again, what Joey was saying, you know, the children use their imaginations, and yet I think they can draw the line between, you know, realizing that, you know, in the Disney story of Princess Jasmine, you know, she really didn't exist, but it's kind of fun to realize that years and years ago there really were princesses that did exist, and, you know, they were real as well.
What'd you do with yours, girl?
Well, I was a pretty young father. I was 20 when, 19 and 20 when my oldest was hatched. So, you know, there was, at the time, we were living in an area where a lot of family was involved in our lives, and some of them weren't incredibly godly, and so trying to be a godly young man who didn't know much about leading a family, I was pretty hypertensive about making sure that she didn't hear something that wasn't true. So my second and third children, you know, I was in the Army. Not my second, but I was in the Army for my third. We weren't around family too much for the second and third. I was a little bit more relaxed. You know, there were some hills worth dying on. But I did grow up in a particular church movement that didn't say much about it, and they would, there'd be a thunderous sermon or two about every Christmas season about if you lie to your kids about Santa and they find out, what will happen? Will they think you're lying about Jesus? And so, I mean, there were some emotional things being, you know, preached for whole sermons, you know, but this is the same crowd that would preach whole sermons on MySpace, you know, against the wretched place where your kids can get involved. And there are intrinsic dangers with all of those situations. But I think that sometimes, we make such a big deal out of the do nots that it's actually like a magnet. I think sometimes if you just, we don't really mess with that. I think the kids kind of just shrug their shoulders at times and say, okay, well, we don't mess with that, you know. But, you know, I think that it's, you know, if my kid is watching, my son likes these superhero movies, you know, which I think evolved from kings and royalty of ancient times, and all of a sudden Thor is a god, you know. And do we really think that he's deity? Well, in the movie he is, and it's just kind of fun to imagine. And, you know, there's, I guess that's a separate podcast altogether, whether or not you should be watching superhero movies. But when it comes to little kids thinking that dad doesn't work for any particular reason and presents show up underneath the tree, you know, yeah, early on we just said, no, that's really not what happens.
Brian, what about you?
Well, I haven't done anything with my children yet.
How about when you were a child?
No special
Brian.
Announcements either. When I was a child, my mom was definitely the strong one, and she made it clear that, you know, there's no such thing as Santa Claus. But we would still have fun with it. I mean, it was, you know, then it was if you weren't behaving come end of November, so if you don't behave, Santa's not going to get anything. You know, and then it's kind of like, okay, Mom, I got it. Well, we still knew who it was, but it was never to know who it was and then, you know, walk through the store. My mom would always use it as a teaching time. You know what? They'd put the X here and, you know, took out the Christ, and they'd rather have, you know, Santa up in the yard than they would Jesus. And she took everything that we saw that was Santa and just made sure that she put the focus back on where it belonged. Which I think is an excellent example of, you know, because you don't want to be like, oh, there's no such thing as Santa. Well, no, yeah, here it is. He's the historical character, as mentioned in the article. But you know what? That's all he is a guy who did some good things, and people like to remember him. But the real reason why we celebrate Christmas is coming in the next podcast.
And I think that one thing, Bill just briefly made the statement, he does this all the time, he's awesome, just coming up with these little quippy things. But, you know, I think that, and because of our situation, you know, growing up, we knew that our parents sacrificed to get us presents really early on. And so the focus was on, hey, Mom and Dad did this for us. And the same thing in our family, because, you know, Christmas time, getting something for everybody took a little effort and figuring out how you're going to do that. And I think the kids pick up on that really early. And so it seems like if you mess with Santa, you just take away an opportunity to be grateful to the people who really are responsible, which are your parents. Mm-hmm. And that Dad works hard and makes this happen. And, you know, one thing in talking to all my kids, they've all expressed that they were grateful that we struggled when we were first married because they could be thankful for that stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, and that's surprising to me because you would think that the opposite would be true.
No, but I know your children, John, and what you're saying is true.
And I think it comes from my wife because she very early on made sure, this comes from who? Go over there and hug them now.
Mm-hmm.
And things that I was just totally clueless as a, you know, self-absorbed
person. I was talking to a church member yesterday, and he was exasperated because one of his five, presented him a list of what he liked for Christmas, and there was $2,000 worth of stuff on his list.
I got a list like that.
$2,000. That's one of five. You know, and this is his oldest. So I mean, that's what we're struggling with in the world. And my boy's the same way. I mean, we're struggling with this. What's reasonable to ask for? And you know, does he even go through the math? You know, you are one of five. You want $10,000 worth of gifts for the children, and then Mom and Dad get what? Nothing. And you know, Grandma and Grandpa and uncles, aunts, you know, where does you want Dad to spend $20,000 on Christmas? You know, you see, I mean, I saw that there are lots of opportunities to teach here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when you have a make-believe guy who can just make presents willy-nilly up in the North Pole, yeah. You know, then I don't have to think. But when I recognize all of a sudden that it's Mom and Dad working hard for this, you know, and I think a good principle is that Mom, you know, as men in the room, Mom should get the most, you know, the children shouldn't be the ones getting the most presents. Mom should get the most presents.
Yeah, and Dad should take out their children and shop for Mom with them.
So it's a family thing.
And that, I think that's another thing that
presents. It's a long drive to Amazon.
It means.
Well, they can sit in my lap while I put things in the cart on Amazon.
But I just think back even to the opportunities that I missed because we waited kind of until they were a lot older for them to start giving gifts to the other children and to Mom and stuff. You know, maybe when they're 5 or 6. That could happen when they're even don't cognitively realize it, you know, 2 and 3. That, hey, this gift giving thing is really about, you know, I'm showing my love to you and not about getting what I want.
Well, my son already recognizes that because if we check the mail and it's got Mommy's name on it, he runs and gives it to Mom and he's so excited to be able to run and get this to Mom and she gives him a high five and she gets all excited because he did what he was supposed to do, and he brought it to Mom and gave her something. And he enjoys doing that, and he's not 2 years old. And so, you know, it's not a, it's something that just, you just try to make it part, it's a cultural thing. It becomes part of your family culture. And it's not something that you wait until they're 7 or 8 years old. All of a sudden, we need to reinforce thankfulness. You know, it's something that, you know, you should be doing almost right away, you know, as soon as you can. Thank you. And they may not be able to say it. They may not be able to hear it. They may not be able to learn it right away, but it's just you're building that.
Well, 10 lepers were healed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One came back. I mean, that's indicative right there, isn't it? Mm-hmm. One came back. One said thank you.
Yeah.
David, two boys.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do Santa. My youngest is too young, and my older doesn't really care about stuff like that. So
perfect.
So it's been easy in that sense. I was thinking, I don't think guys like us have to worry too much about Santa corrupting our households, because we're going to tell our kids about Christmas, you know. But just let me share just a little bit from me, and me growing up, because and we may have listeners that can relate to this, or maybe are raising a kid in a single parent home or something like that. But I told the youth last night, you know, I didn't like Christmas when I was a kid. I hated Christmas because it meant I had to be around people that I didn't think really cared about me very much, you know. And so as I got older, I did everything I could to stay away during Christmas. You know, I it was great to play basketball in college because I didn't have to come home at Christmas. And I know that's not the typical idea, but I can remember when I was a kid, I didn't get presents really from mom and dad for Christmas. I knew my grandparents bought me stuff for Christmas, and I knew Santa brought me stuff for Christmas. So if it wasn't for Mimi and Pap and Santa, I wasn't getting much for Christmas. And so I can remember when I was in second grade, and having the moment at public school when the other kid comes up and goes, "You don't really believe in Santa, do you?" And I can remember really as a second grader having kind of a crisis of faith and saying, you know, you got to be cool at school and say, and of course not. Of course I don't believe in that. And then having kind of this crisis moment of, well, if Santa's not real, then what else isn't real? You know? And so if you're in a situation and kids don't know what to believe in or what to count on, I think Santa can be dangerous. I think all of a sudden, well, then nothing's real. Then nothing you tell me is real. And I think you can really get to that point. I don't think that's really the problem in a solid Bible-believing Christian home. Because I would hope most people that have a Christian worldview would not place Santa on the pedestal. But in the nominal Christian home, I think they put Santa on a pedestal. In the dysfunctional home, they absolutely put Santa on a pedestal. And if that is taken out from under you, there can be some real skepticism that comes with that. And I don't know if Santa created my hostility towards God. I'm sure that wasn't it, but I'm sure it didn't help the situation at all when I was growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that when you look at this time of year, you're watching all the television shows, you take Polar Express or Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. I watched one of those the other night. And, you know, they put this guy up here. It's so good for Virginia to believe that Santa Claus exists. It's so good for her to keep that faith, but he's not really real. And so it's almost like it's a setup. Let's give them faith, and then let's dash their faith on the rocks, and then there is no Santa Claus. And so the first thing that they ever truly believe in isn't really real, and so now you've kind of made faith just this imaginary thing that we do, and it doesn't really have any substance to it. And I think that's a point well taken. It's dangerous to have kids putting their faith in something that doesn't exist, because now that's what faith is equated with, not this supernatural thing that even though we can't see it, he's there. And I think it's almost like it's purposefully done to try to distract away from real faith or genuine faith.
Mm-hmm. And I think one element of that we haven't talked about is, and I hear this a lot, you know, his ability to reward behavior. You know, I go, I'm in the Walmart, and I hear the mom tell the kid, "Do you want Santa to bring something nice? Then sit down and be quiet." You know, and I just think, man, no, that's damaging. That just doesn't work at all.
So I have a question. We're talking about Santa as far as the individual. So what do we do as far as the Christmas songs that would lift up Santa?
What would be one?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I mean, things like that are those Christmas songs that would include, you know.
I'm going to tell you right now that, you know, now when I was clear that my kids did not believe in it, we actually have, you know, Nutcracker type Santa figurines, because I think they're beautiful, especially if you get them in varying colors at post exchanges in Germany and that kind of thing. I mean, that's a big part of German culture is Santa Claus. St. Nick's big in Germany. So my kids know that this is as real as the Tooth Fairy, you know, then who cares? Then he's just bring them in. No, Tooth Fairy's not real. I know it's been a week since you lost a tooth, but I mean, it's a, But so I don't particularly have a problem with, you know, playing that kind of music or singing that kind of music simply because it is it's bogus, and everyone knows it's bogus, and it's just maybe it would go first, I think, under the heading of idol, if anything. But I don't think it would go under the heading of deceit, quite like taking a 7-year-old and trying to get him to believe in the superhero that's going to reward him and is omnipresent and sovereign.
Well, and I agree with you, but it's just, you know, there might be a listener out there that's thinking, okay, well, if we're going to, you know, do we throw out the baby with the bathwater, or is it just, you know what, let's go ahead and teach children that, okay, he was a historical character, what you the world says he does not do, but at the same time, we can go ahead and sing.
I'm having a hard time picturing. Kids, gather around, let me tell you about this 4th century bishop. I just don't think that's happening too often
in
our households.
And in our church culture, we don't celebrate any type of human historical figure. I mean, the closest thing that we get to is, you know, we quote...
We're getting better about that.
Famous
here,
preachers and stuff.
Yeah.
But
Who's the one you just did that Baptist, what was his name? You did it on a Sunday night after you wrote a paper on it.
Michael Sadler?
Yeah, Sadler, that's right. And, of course, I did Roger Williams. You've done Martin Luther a few times. So,
but I mean, as far as every year of this day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, because he's talking about celebrating St. Right. Nicholas on December 6th.
Right.
We don't do that.
No.
Baptists don't do that.
No, and in some regards, John, it's unfortunate that we don't, because we have lost a element of our history that we come from 2,000 years of men and women who have sacrificed great for the cause of Christ, you know, and that's why we have in Baptist churches all across the United States utter ignorance when you give them 10 names and say, tell me what these men did, what was their contribution to the cause of Christ, and it's just sheer stupidity almost, you know. St. Patrick, a lot of people wear green and get drunk, but Patrick was an evangelist.
Yes. And he inspired green milkshakes at McDonald's, and I am big on those.
And if you're a Protestant, you can wear orange instead of green, and it's a great... Why are you wearing orange today? Because I'm not Catholic, and we non-Catholic people wear orange on St. Patrick's Day. Just opened up another opportunity to split the difference between the two.
Right. But the man brought the gospel.
He did. He did.
Right. Mm-hmm. Two people who needed the gospel. And that's utterly been forgotten.
Right.
And I think it's our reaction to the liturgical calendar.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. It's our reaction. It's our overreaction. Right. And we're doing that all the time.
And it's evidenced in things like, who believed that before you, when someone comes up with some sort of unique sounding doctrine? Well, bless God, I got it right out of the Bible.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if you're the first person to believe it, you're a heretic. Yeah, you know, maybe. It could be there's a heretic before you. But if there's not an unbroken strand of people that have believed a body of truth, then you're wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why this guy that I'm dealing with on the podcast on modalism, Bill, you know, you really think that after 2,000 years of church history, you're going to now define the Trinity?
You're going to decode the Trinity
for us. You're going to figure it out for us? That we've got, you know, we've got Catholics, Orthodox Greeks, and Protestants that all agree on this single doctrine, and we're all wrong? Mm-hmm. And, you know, think about the arrogancy in that very idea. For 2,000 years, I think that David's point is well taken. If your home isn't one of that solid Orthodox home, you know, if your home isn't at home where it's obvious God is king, then you got to be careful here.
Sure.
If your home is a home where God is sovereign and Christ is exalted, then the Pillsbury Doughboy can come over on Saturday mornings and make cinnamon rolls, and Santa Claus can deliver Christmas gifts on Sunday morning.
Right.
And Superman can fly through the living room in the afternoon, and nobody is bothered one bit.
Right.
But if not, and there are listeners out there that haven't made it a priority to have Christ the King in their home, then they need to be careful. If you're probably a typical Three to Thrive Baptist listening to this podcast, Presbyterian listening to this podcast, you can probably have a whole lot of fun with Santa Claus is coming to town, and then go right back to reading the Christmas story at the appropriate time.
I prefer grandmother got ran over by a
reindeer. Yes.
We got to class this up a little bit. So I'm glad you said that.
My grandmother was always offended. I couldn't figure out why.
All right.
There's a Doug Dynasty Christmas album too, I'm sure. Yeah. Probably on Amazon. So.
Okay, well, now that you understand another potential Christmas gift for somebody out there, and we've promoted Amazon enough, considering the organization hasn't made money yet, and it's just hanging on by the thread.
Yeah.
But in any case, if you're out there and you're one of these anti-Saint Nick guys, please don't put a nasty comment on here, okay? There's no reason for you to come on the net and voice your nastiness. But if you have a legitimate idea or something that we haven't considered in this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Post your comment directly to this, and it seems most appropriate to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.